Okay, this is the hour. We will take your phone calls with Adam Bly. Perhaps your stories. Is your house haunted? Possession? Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Adam Bly with us. Adam, when you were a little boy, mm-hmm. were you interested in ghosts and creatures and things like that?
Well, you know, that's interesting. Yes, that I was interested in life and what's going on, and I have to say I did have a lot of strange experiences as a child. And looking back on it, it does seem like there was some spiritual stuff coming around. Why that was, I'm not sure. And then once I got involved in this work, those kind of visitations and everything stopped. So it was, looking back on it, I think God was allowing it because it kind of desensitized me to all of this, and it made it so that I'm not afraid or startled by it anymore. So in a sense, I think it was kind of like a boot camp for me.
When you put together the pastoral manual for priests, how does it begin? I mean, what do you start saying to them? When they open that up, what do they see?
Well, the first thing that I cover in there is the question of whether any of this is real or not. And I think that's an important place to start because, you know, priests basically don't have much training in this in seminary. And in the previous generation, sometimes they were even taught that the devil is just an idea or is just the evil in people, and it was an allegory. So I think the first thing to establish is that this is a real phenomenon and it has to be treated seriously. And so the first section of the manual really tries to address that from a number of angles.
Are you invited in by the church, or how do you get there? How do you get to the priests?
You mean to an exorcist?
Yeah.
Well, if you were a person in the community and you thought you had a problem, you have to start with your local spiritual leader. So if you're Catholic, that would mean your pastor, and you talk to them about what's going on, and then they should take that to the diocese if they think there's merit in the complaint. Now, if you run into something where maybe you have a priest who says, look, I have no idea, I don't know about this stuff, you know, I don't want to deal with this, that's okay. Just go directly to your diocese, write them a nice letter, be very polite and civil and say, you know, I'm having these issues, you know, and I'd like somebody to take a look at it. So basically, you start with your local spiritual leader. If you don't get anywhere there, write a nice, polite letter to the diocese, and hopefully they'll have somebody evaluate you.
Well, that's a good point. Now, do you have a point person in this country for the church?
There's not one point person in the country, no. It's basically under each diocese. So different bishops might handle it slightly differently, but they're going to have somebody there that's appointed to take these type of calls. Usually it's going to be a priest who's maybe the head of the committee that addresses these issues. So like here in Pittsburgh, there's a priest that Bishop Zubik has appointed that's the head of our committee, and he looks over every case that comes in. Mm-hmm. Then we discuss it as a group and, you know, move forward as we think is appropriate. So there's going to be somebody that they're going to direct that call to that should know about this stuff.
Do they take these cases seriously, Adam?
In my experience, yeah, they very much do. Now, they're going to be interested in making sure that it's not a mental health issue or a physical issue, so they're not going to, you know, jump and endorse it right from the door. They're going to want to take a good look at it and make sure it's been scrutinized. But yeah, they're going to take it seriously.
What are the odds of doing a reality television show, not like we've seen on TV to date, but with the real priest and someone like you?
Well, that's not going to happen for a couple reasons, George. First off, it's, in my opinion, and I think the priests would agree, it's unethical to film people that are suffering because there could be a sense for that person that I have to agree to do this if I'm going to get help, and that's just wrong. The other thing is the church has very strict rules that there's no media recording of exorcisms. And furthermore, we don't even allow people to come that just want to watch. So it's basically very dangerous to come to an exorcism for some selfish reason. That person's not going to be protected. They're going to be vulnerable. And we would be responsible if they got hurt.
they could get hit then, right?
Oh, absolutely. Not just physically, also mentally. We've had people go into exorcisms that had mortal sin unconfessed on them, that had the demon broke their mind and they were institutionalized.
All right, let's take some calls. Chris is in Canada, Vancouver Island. Welcome to the program, Chris. Go ahead.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good, Chris. Thank you.
The question I have is regarding demons and the Battle of Armageddon. Also, it says in the Bible that there'll be a war between Michael, the archangel, and his angels, and the dragon and his demons, and that they would gather up the kings and the military, the kings and the armies of the earth, to war against God's people. And I'm curious, as the court systems really seem to be deteriorating. Like, if you look on the news nowadays, you see these court cases, and it's just unbelievable what people are getting away with and how some innocent people are being put on death row. And they find out, they say since 1970, it's been over 130 people have been wrongly put on death row that they found out they were actually innocent. And I'm wondering if with these demons and the way that the world is starting to favor evolution, if this is opening a conduit to these demons, to people that are losing faith, and so that they can establish them as their pawns in corrupting the court system, so that they don't even use a Bible in the courtrooms anymore, and the judges are convicting innocent people, and they're letting guilty people free.
All right, that's an interesting paradox there too. You had earlier mentioned, Adam, that people bring the demon in. They basically give them the right, the permission to come in and do that. Chris's particular case, people would have to do that, wouldn't they have to accept the demon in order to get possessed?
Yeah, and I think what he might be alluding to, it's not so much possession all the time, but it could be, you know, a lot of influence. So kind of think of it like temptation, but more of an encouragement to work in a certain way. The question kind of had two parts. I mean, Revelations is a big topic we don't have time for, but basically the war that's referenced in Revelations, that's kind of a crescendo event that is going to be very discreet in time. It's going to be at a specific time, so that's not going on right now, I'm pretty sure. The issue about how the world's becoming less religious and more secular, sure. But don't think of it like, oh, the demons are doing more now than they ever did. They're still doing their job. They've always done their job. There's always been wars in the world. There's always been injustice. So nothing's changed there. But as the world becomes more secular, I think we do see more of these cases, because basically the protection that comes with the spiritual life slides back as the people stop engaging in the spiritual life.
Have you ever seen an animal possessed, like a dog? You know, I refer back to Hollywood at The Omen. We see these, you know, scary-looking dogs always at the corner. Can they be possessed?
They can certainly be affected, and possibly. I think it's an interesting question. Now, they certainly, demons in many infestation cases have killed people's pets, sometimes in horrible ways, as part of, you know, mm-hmm. basically terrifying that person. And I do believe, anecdotally, I read that there was one of the popes had a parrot that became possessed and started speaking blasphemies. And
in a guttural voice.
Well, I don't know if it was a guttural voice. It was probably still talking like Polly, but yeah. But basically that is in the literature. So there's some evidence of that. You know, there's a few cases in the Bible where animals spoke. So there's some precedence for that, but more often they just attack the animals as opposed to using them.
There seems to be an incredible craze now in Hollywood with these very spiritual movies. I mean, the one on God is coming out. We've heard it on this program as an advertisement. Mm-hmm. Noah is coming out. Mm-hmm. What's going on there, in your opinion, Adam? Why is Hollywood waking up? You know, we had those biblical Bible ministries, the miniseries. Mm-hmm. Why the fascination with all this?
Well, I think they're following the money. I think Hollywood responds to what people want. And if people put their money down and they vote with their dollars, like, for instance, when Mel Gibson did his movie, The Passion of the Christ, you know, there was a lot of, I think, criticism and doubt about it. And so he put up a lot of his own money. But then when he did so well, you kind of saw Hollywood starting to follow suit and experimenting with that.
That's right.
And then they made a lot of money, so now they're going to keep doing it. But I think the more important thing is, what does that tell you about people? And I think it tells you that people are hungry for a spiritual aspect of their lives and hungry for a religious aspect.
East of the Rockies, Bianca is with us in Iron Mountain, Michigan. Good morning, Bianca.
Hi. A really good show tonight, and a very truthful. Adam, you definitely have it 100% right. The only thing you don't have right is when it comes to the diocese, especially where I am, they don't take it too seriously. My own situation, my father is perfectly possessed. I'm not worried about him because he chose what he chose his position back in 67. He got into Satanism for power and control. And he sold his soul, and he is perfectly possessed. Mm-hmm. And it's his choice. It's fine. Fortunately, the three family members, myself included, have been his victims. And for 47 years, now, after he got into Satanism, sold his soul, he had a child with my mother, my little brother, and he offered this child to Satan.
Oh.
My brother's dead 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
That poor kid suffered so bad. I just can't believe sometimes that God can be so cruel. My mother suffered. I still suffer. I'm the only one left. I'm not possessed, but he does bother me. I'm tired of it. I am so tired of it, but there's nothing I can do until that man dies. He's 83. He's not dying. I don't know when God will take this man off. I am tired of suffering. And it's like I said, an exorcism would not help me because I'm not the one possessed.
Right.
And yeah. I know I had the nuns years ago pray for this man, and I went into convulsions. I could have been killed. They stopped. They quit. They said, we ain't touching this man. That was the nuns here in Iron Mountain. But the bishop tried to get help for years for my family. The bishop didn't believe. Priest didn't believe. Oh, God, I would never
do that.
What
do you do with something like that?
Never be that cruel.
Adam, what do you do with someone like that?
Well, this is a very real example, George, and
sure,
unfortunately, this is sounds like a not typical, but this is the kind of story that we hear. This is the way things go. Now, the one positive thing that she can do is renounce the choices that he made that affected her. And I know that sounds simple, but for instance, when she referenced that when the nuns prayed, she was affected while they were praying for her father. That's an indication or a clue that there's a spiritual connection between the father and the daughter, because he probably consigned all of his children over to hell and through his authority over them, consigned them over. And they need to, now that she's come of age and she's an adult before God, she needs to formally say to God, probably with the priest, to say, I renounce the choices my father made. I renounce the commitments that he made on my behalf. And I now reject that, and I ask God to remove that from my life. And that's removing the legal rights that he probably put on her. And then, in addition to that, her sacramental life, and then people praying for her, hopefully she'll get some relief.
And the fact that he's 83 and she says he'll never die, I mean, do they last a long time? Is something keeping him going?
I've not seen evidence of that. No, it's probably just he's lucky. Men usually don't live as long. he's probably just having a natural long life. I don't think the devil, you know, basically, George, our understanding is the devil cannot create life and he cannot cure. So he would not be able to extend somebody's life. He can only have a sham of helping us. Like, for instance, if he caused a pain in our body, he could then say, well, I'll cure you of that pain, and he's only removing some harm that he did, but he's not able to extend or give life.
What happens to that possessed soul, Adam? Where does it go? I mean, is it you know, banished to hell or what?
No. Our souls are always judged on our own merit, regardless of the condition we're in when we die. It's impossible to sell your soul completely to the devil. The devil never owns a soul. God decides where that soul goes. So when he dies, he's going to be separated from whatever spirits he's connected to, and he's going to be judged on his own merit. So now if he ends up being damned, you know, they're going to torture him like everybody else for that punishment, but he's not going to be dragged there just because he's possessed.
Let's go to our first-time caller in Portland, Oregon. Dallin is with us. Dallin, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
How's it going, George?
Good. Thank you.
I was just curious. I was here with my girlfriend, and we were discussing whether or not there was a constant demographic that goes along with this, like based on like race, age, sex, income level or housing that affects this, or like maybe invites the demonic possession. And also earlier, the guest was discussing how there are some people who invite it and live their whole lives with it. I immediately thought of like a form of almost walking pneumonia, mm-hmm. like a walking possession. And do those certain types of people choose certain occupations?
Okay.
Those are my few questions.
All right, very good. Dalen, thank you. All right, do these people who are possessed, you know, all walks of life, or who are they?
Yeah, basically we do see all walks of life. It's now we do see more women than men, and I'm not sure, I can't give you an exact reason for that, but we do tend to see more females than males. But we see people from all races, all religions, all economic kind of strata in society, for sure.
So there are no boundaries for the demon?
No, because this is a free will issue. It's a human issue. It's not about, you know, race or economics or the language that you speak or anything else. It's a much more fundamental issue.
That's fascinating. Adam, stick with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Adam Bly, our special guest, his website linked up at Coast to Coast AM. .com. It is called Religious Demonology. And if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. We've got a full staff that could assist you in case you have a question or two. And also don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter by going to coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back in a moment and we're going to take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, split show for you for the first couple hours, physicist Michio Kaku joins us, talking about his new work, The Future of Mind. And then later on, Micah Hanks with the Ghost Rockets, Mystery Missiles, and Phantom Projectiles in Our Skies. Looking forward to that. We're going to come back in a moment with Adam Bly, and we'll take final calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Adam Bly with us. We're going to take your calls, final calls here. And Adam, with what the church is doing right now, and as you said, they're rewriting the current rite of the exorcism rite, mm-hmm. Because they feel compelled to. I think that's probably a mistake. And as we talked about earlier, they may not change it a lot. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it was working quite well. They're revising it because they have to. It was just part of the rules of the last ecumenical council. And, you know, when they first started, a lot of the exorcists kind of came out, and Father Amorth kind of famously came out and said, you know, this was written by theologians. They didn't really consult the exorcists. It's not going to work. But to their credit, you know, they've gone back and they've consulted a lot of exorcists. So in the end, you know, we have to remember that prayer is prayer. And this isn't magic, so it's not like you have to have the right magic incantation to get the right effect. Ultimately, it's God doing these things. So you're right, but also we want to also remember that it's just prayer. And I think we're going to be fine with the new rite.
What do you think is the more serious problem, the possessions, the demonic possessions of an individual or of a house?
Well, I mean, in terms of suffering, the possessions of people is more intense, but they're more rare. And I think the house cases affect more people. So when there's a house and there's a family there and there's kids involved, you know, kind of like Bob Cranmer's case that you're going to talk with Bob, I think, on another date, you'll hear about that. And when you hear about situations like his where there's kids growing up in the house, you know, you're talking about affecting four or five people simultaneously and then all the lives that they touch. So I think, you know, in a sense, these house cases can be very, very important because they affect the community. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the possessions, it's more like an intense individual suffering.
Do you remember the Amityville horror story?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's one right there of a house that was very possessed.
Yeah, that's a tough one because, you know, different people say different things about what really happened and how intense it was. And I think the kids have been coming out and saying more, you know, now that George has passed on, I think the boys are coming out and saying more.
Abuse.
But, you know, just as an example, it's something to look at and have a sense of how it can affect a family. And even if you listen to them now and you hear them talk, you can hear the pain, you know, that's still in their lives all these years later.
Well, let's go to Mary in San Diego on the wild card line. Hi, Mary. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello.
Hi, Mary.
Okay. It's Louisa. My first name is Louisa.
How'd I get Mary?
Hello. Well, that's a long story, but I'm Louisa, and I'm in San Diego. There are some people that was in my family that my mother raised us on the Lord side, and I am still a very much traveling evangelist. They sent a spirit called witchcraft spirit, and this man in St. Louis told me, a pastor rather, he said that they would follow me everywhere I go, and sure enough, they do. And this person that sent the spirit died, and now her spirit is here. So there are three spirits that are attached to me, and I need an exorcism to help get rid of, because the Lord said, we're two touching and agreeing, he'll be in the midst.
All right, you're in San Diego. Here's somebody who knows they're possessed, wants help. Adam, what do you recommend? How does she start? Psychiatric help first. I mean, and not that she needs it, but we need to do that. But how do you refer her to a priest in that region, San Diego?
Well, the first thing to notice in what she said, it sounds like there's things following her as opposed to her experiencing possession. And so that's, you know, possession is required for a formal exorcism. They only do them for possession. So her situation would require deliverance prayer, which is people praying and asking God to remove the problem. I think the crux of that, you know, there might be other issues here, but a big part of that is the fear. So that pastor who said these spirits of witchcraft are going to follow you wherever you go, that doesn't show any faith in God. That's encouraging fear in a person and giving honor to evil spirits and saying they're powerful things that you can't resist and will follow you forever.
Which is not a good thing.
Exactly. And so the first thing to do in a situation like that is to shift your trust and focus back to God, back to Jesus Christ, and trust in God as opposed to fearing evil spirits.
And, you know, she feels as if these spirits that have come at her are probably going to destroy her. Is this something that you would recommend people jump on immediately? If they think they're possessed, don't waste any time?
Well, you know, one thing, George, people that are truly possessed generally are not coming forward and asking for help themselves. It's going
like,
to be their,
like
it's,
this.
Okay. It's going to be their family members or their friends are coming forward for them, because a truly possessed person would be incapable of vocalizing asking for help with somebody connected with genuine spiritual help. The demon would stop them. So, you know, her situation is probably oppression. But if there's people out there that genuinely feel that they're possessed, they need to work with their local spiritual leader, but they also have to be open to any medical or psychiatric things that are found, you know, and not be resistant to that. You know, allow that to be treated. Because also, George, many of these cases, it's both. Many of these cases, people are depressed and irritable and sleep-deprived because of the spirit. And over the years, it's worn them down. And so they may need treatment for both.
Well, does the possession create the mental illness, or does the mental illness create the possession?
Well, the mental illness doesn't create true possession. It can create people that think they're possessed. But the possession will drive people crazy in a sense, not literally psychotic, but it'll wear them down and make them feel, you know, caged in and isolated and terrified. And so eventually, sure, it's going to wear you down, and it's going to make you a very irritable, sad, and depressed person.
We go next to Stephen in Nazareth, Pennsylvania. Stephen, good morning.
Hi, George. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, I just want to make a comment. You made a statement earlier that when the demons were cast from heaven, that they were sent down to earth and not to hell. I didn't know that before, and it kind of runs into my next question here. The people today in our culture could be a little nicer, but I was just wondering what your opinion is on could be a demonic oppression of the people, because they're so nasty with each other, and they could be more charitable. And the second was just a statement of an observation I had to deal with back on October 1st. I was in a cemetery listening to a radio show because it was higher up, picked the signal up, and I saw a skeleton that was walking.
Oh.
So I wonder if that was a demonic or if that was like something bizarre. I've had other paranormal experiences in my life, but this most recent one was the skeleton. It was 3D. It was very flexible. And as soon as I saw it, I put the car in drive and got the heck out of there. So I'll hang up and I'll listen to your response.
All right. Well, fascinating.
Well, you know, of course, there's a few things to look at there. I mean, you want to make sure people weren't messing with him. Like sometimes kids will play pranks and they'll have mannequins or whatnot to mess with people. You want to rule out, you know, hallucinations for what of any source. Of course, that's just to be reasonable. Now, let's say he really did see a spirit of some type. Generally, human souls are not hanging out in cemeteries. So you want to look for the cemeteries that are out of sight from the road, that are basically hidden, where you could do stuff there and not be seen, is a favorite place for people to do occult rituals. The cemeteries that are well-lit and can be seen from the road, that's not as likely. So if he was in a cemetery that's basically hidden, there's a chance that there's been more occult activity there and there could be stuff hanging around and it probably wasn't a human soul. But again, something like that, you really want to make sure that wasn't some type of hallucination.
How many mental institutions, psychiatric wards, Adam, are filled with people who may truly be possessed?
I actually don't think it's that common, George. My professional life, I work in the prisons as a psychologist, and at least in my state, that's where we put a lot of the mentally ill, sadly. And so I've met a lot of people with the full range of mental illness, and I've only met a couple over the years that I look back and I think that person was possessed.
Let's go to Chuck now in San Diego. Chuck, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Chuck. You with us?
Good evening, gentlemen. I got a question for your guest there, Adam.
Okay, go ahead, Chuck.
What's the difference between poltergeist entities and demons? And I'll tell you my answer off the air. First time caller, long time listener.
All right, great. Thank you, Chuck. Poltergeist, demons. Adam.
Well, of course, poltergeist is just a German word for noisy spirit, all right? So it describes a type of activity. It's not actually a type of spirit. So anytime there was spirits that were throwing stuff, knocking, moving stuff around, they would call it a poltergeist if it was basically noisy. demonic hauntings, they will sometimes start pretending to be a ghost, whatever it is that's going to suck you in and deceive you, and then later it'll escalate into more violence and blasphemy. So in the early stages, demonic haunting can look just like a classic poltergeist, where they're just playing little parlor tricks, but you're going to see it escalate over time. If there's a human spirit there that's signaling a need for prayer, which is what human spirits do that are in purgatory, they may make noises that are non-destructive and not terrifying. And so basically you need some help to figure out what you're dealing with.
Do you find, Adam, that with humankind, that the more depressed people are, the more upset they are, the more just whacked out that they might be, that possessions seem to go up? They're on the uptick?
No, not really. I think that people could possibly get more involved in, you know, more influence and oppression. But possession, you know, you're talking about more explicit black magic and occult activity. So, you know, being driven down into depression and maybe being tempted to suicide or self-harm, that's very different than explicitly cutting a deal in a black magic setting.
Steve's in Colorado Springs. Hey, Stephen, go ahead.
My name is Steve.
Dave,
thank you, Mr. Norrie and Mr. Bly. Fascinating topic we've got tonight. I've got three quick questions and a comment. My first question is, do you know if St. Pope John Paul II ever performed an exorcism? And do you know if ministers and other clerical are in danger while performing an exorcism? And are gay people more susceptible to possession? The reason I ask that is because churches won't talk about the gay community because they're afraid to lose people, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you, sir.
All right, three quick questions. We'll start with John Paul.
Sure. Yeah, it is my recollection that he did do kind of an informal exorcism. I believe it was on a woman during one of his audiences when he was moving through the crowd, and he stopped and prayed for a little while with the person. So it wasn't what you would call a solemn exorcism where the formal ritual, but he did pray over the person. We don't know what exactly he said. Are you in danger? Yes, but if you're in a state of grace, you have no unconfessed sin, and you're doing things by the book, the danger is minimized, but it's never completely safe. If you're doing it illicitly, you know, when you shouldn't be doing it, it's incredibly dangerous. Number three, are gay people more susceptible? I don't think so, because when we're talking about possession, again, it's about a free will choice to ask for this. And so that's independent of your sexual orientation.
Yeah. So, you know, these games that the kids play these days, Adam, you know, where they're trying to summon a demon, those things really work, don't they?
Well, they can really work. You know, how many people play with these things every day? You know, tens of thousands, but they don't all become oppressed or possessed. So basically, you need to open the door, but then hell has to be interested in coming through the door. And we don't yet, and we probably never will know, why some people are more interesting to hell than others. But basically, if you play Russian roulette and keep opening that door over and over, you're running that risk that something's going to be on the other side that's going to take up your offer.
Let's go next to Elizabeth, San Diego. Hey, Elizabeth, go ahead.
Yes. Well, my question is, oh, my God. Okay. The whole situation is that when I was born, my mom said that she heard baby cry before I was out of the womb. After I was born, I was informed that when I was created, that supposedly my dad was possessed on the process. And my mom also told me that I was a Satan child. So anyways, I grew up and I kind of like tried to wash away that from my head. However, the time started going by and I started seeing like nightmares of vision. And then within a day or two, things would come up in the news, what I just saw. So that kind of like scared me up. And as the time passed by, I become a mom myself of two kids. my first kid, when he reached the age of 5, he started coming to me and telling me, "Mom, I just had a nightmare." And he will describe what happened in the nightmare. And within a day, we will see the same thing that he told me in the news, that it just happened. Now, my daughter is now going to be 14, and she's starting to experience the same thing. And my main concern is, lately, she's been having a weird nightmare that is telling her that a guy dressed all in black that doesn't show his face but have really shiny eyes keep telling her, "You and your family are getting ready for the end of the world, and you guys are the key."
Let's let you react to that, Adam. We only have about 35 seconds left.
Sure. So really quickly, you're not a child of Satan, all right? And really quickly, what you need to do, you need to renounce any commitment your parents or anybody in the family made committing the family to these spirits. Renounce that. Reject it. Ask God to remove the spirit from the family line. Reject it on behalf of your children. Also, you have the authority to do that. You do not need to be afraid of this stuff. I'm not saying that it's definitely a spirit, but this sounds real. So basically, work with a priest, go to confession. You're not a child of Satan, you're a child of God, and you have the authority to reject this and cast it out of your family line.
Adam, you take care of yourself, and thank you so much for just a wonderful interview. Adam Bly, of course, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Napanartel. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.